This is tape number one from the Book of Grace, Ram Dass's program at the Upland Hills Ecological Awareness Center, and it took place on February 15th and 16th, 1997.
Good morning. Two components to what we will work with now this morning. One of them is speaking and one of them is listening. It's interesting to become mindful of where you listen from when you're listening to another person. Whether you listen in from the judging place, whether you are really empathetic to listen from inside them, can you feel your way through listening into what their predicament is? Are you listening, planning what you would say to them? Thinking, what am I supposed to do about this? Are you listening, waiting for them to be done so you can say something? Are you half listening and half daydreaming, or planning, or remembering? If the essence of a human connection has to do in part with feeling heard, the listener has quite a responsibility to listen. And I have, over the years, found listening to be an incredible practice as I listen more deeply into the universe. It's like listening to the trees, or listening to a river, or listening. Listening to the wisdom inherent in the universe. And listening to animals and people. So part of the process we will work with this morning is listening, which is the opportunity to be mindful of the way in which you listen, and then to keep listening in more deeply and more deeply. And the other is the speaking part. Whether it's a question or a reflection or a story that a person shares, what I do is I speak from my heart. I speak as close to truth as I can. And I say what I have to say, and then I shut up. I don't just keep talking to hear myself talk. We have a few hours now of what I consider precious time for us to attempt to become more conscious, working with one another through this process. And it is a shared responsibility. It's not a situation where either of us are passive, nor either of us active. We are both passive and active. But we are actively listening, and we are actively contributing. Now, what I'd like to do is to request that you ask yourself, now that you've been here for over 12 hours, now you're in the heart of a retreat, what are the deepest edges in your life, and how well are you bringing them into spiritual awareness? And how much are you not? Where are the things you are really living? Where is it you're really living? Let's not become intellectual. Let's not make it a distant issue. Let's stay with our lives. And it may be anything. I'm not going to even set a direction for it. Could be about things, about your life, about anything. It could be questions, deep philosophical questions you really want to know, not that you think you ought to want to know, but that you want to know. And you're not being judged by the questions, because they are, those of you that don't know me don't, I guess, know that when I give a lecture, usually, I don't think I should be putting my feet on the box. It feels too sacred to do that. That'd be too higher teaching. That when I give a lecture, I usually introduce myself that ROM is an acronym for Rent a Mouth. And that you have rented my mouth to say to you things you already know. And how do I know you know them is because when I say them, you nod. And how would you nod if you didn't know them? And if you know them, what do you need me to say them to you for? And so it's clear that we're at some stage in this game where we need to say to one another what we need to hear over and over again. So I am just a voice speaking our stuff. I don't feel it's anything that I understand that you don't. I may remember it more, because that's my business, and I hope it'll become your business too. So let's take about 10 minutes of silence, and reflect as to where you are in your life, and what are the things where you're most living with your consciousness, and where is it, how imbued is that with spirit, how awake are you in that situation, is there anything that we can do together that would be helpful to you, or to us. This may be an experience you've had or an observation you've had. And I'll react to things as you present them. And there's no ego needed in this thing, because these are just, you're all rented voices. Don't take it personally. Any questions before we do this? And we'll do it in a little Quaker style, so it'll, when the bell rings and the 10 minutes is up, then it's quiet, and then when somebody would like to say something, just raise your hand and I'll acknowledge it, and when you're done, if there's silence, fine. We don't have to fill all the space. Let the silence always bring you back into a kind of a reflective presence with a little snow falling in the sky and beauty at the moment. Any? Questions, observations, reflections?
We've probably all heard people say there is no coincidence or there are no accidents. And I tend to think that there are both. What do you think? And could you expand a little on chaos and harmony?
The way I deal with that kind of a issue is to acknowledge that there are various planes of consciousness, or channels, or whatever you want to call it. And on one plane, there is the experience of one thing, and on the other plane, there is, looking at the same material, there is a sense, for example, there may be an experience of chaos at one place, but you stand back at another microscopic adjustment and suddenly you see patterns in the chaos. And that's what's happening in chaos theory, for example, and all of those leading edges in physics. And I think it's the same with coincidence and conditionality. I think we experience things as coincidental. If we stood in another place, we might see that what appears coincidental is in fact a lawful resultant of a whole lot of other circumstances, both present, past, and future. That's even farther. Is that dealing with the question? So in a way, it's both and. It's not either or. The rational mind looks for either or.
Right.
You know, and I really, it's like the thing I said last night about it's perfect. It's perfect and it stinks. They're both true. And the game is to have the tension in our being to embrace both of those at the same moment.
I saw you 4 years ago in Cleveland, and I read Miracle of Love, and it blew my mind. And it's interesting that you're between my two gurus, and I came to ask you if you would be a stand-in for Maharaji and let me touch your feet sometime this weekend.
When I first came to Maharaji, I was with this young fellow who was very devoted to Maharaji, and I was just a passenger in the car, and I didn't want to be there anyway. And I didn't like Hinduism because it seemed all like calendar art, day-glow paint. And so I was kind of a little, yeah. And then I came up on the hill, and I saw this young fellow lying out there touching the feet of this man, and I thought, I'm not going to touch his feet. We don't touch people's feet. That's a kind of submission. I don't like that. We don't submit. We Westerners don't submit. And about an hour later, something had happened in me, and all I wanted to do was touch his feet. And he was sitting there, and I was sitting in front of him, and I reached up onto the table he was sitting on to go to touch his feet, and his foot pulled in behind the blanket.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh my God, I'm not pure enough to touch his feet. Which I built a whole psychological case out of that took me years of therapy. Theoretically, what touching feet is, I mean, it has many meanings, but when a being is a spiritual being, they just they exude a certain energy, a certain love, a certain presence. And touching the feet is a way of sort of humbly taking some of that or receiving it or something like that. Or the expression is, I take the dust from the lotus feet of my guru. Which means you take the dust that is walked on and put it on your third eye or on your head, and it's sacred dust. Now, this is all ritual to help with your transformation. The question of anybody doing anything to anybody is something else. And even the concept of submission or surrender is really, it's like when you love somebody, you have a partner and you love them, but you're living in the 20th century, 20th century we're partners and we're equals and all this, and so, let's see, I'll bring you breakfast in bed because you did this for me. That's different from, I love you so much, just the thought of you being waking up to having your breakfast there makes me so happy that I would just do it for that. And in a way, that's the same way as the surrender. The surrender that is no surrender is the true surrender, they say. If you think you're giving up something, forget it. You don't give up something. It's a vehicle for a communication of being with somebody. And when it first happened to me, not because I was holy, but because I was wearing the symbols of holiness, like priestly garb or something, and somebody came up and touched my feet, I was freaked. And I didn't want any part of this game. That was very clear. And the friend that was with me said, don't take it personally. That this person is touching the feet of somebody that represents something that that person wants and values and treasures. And what you do is you bless them in return and then the completion of the thing and get yourself out of the way. So, of course you may. I won't take it personally.
Journey into your 60s around sexuality, the back and forth of that as we age, your sexuality in your 60s encouraging for us perhaps too as we go that way in our aging process, and how our awareness of our aging bodies and our genetics and our mortality seems to cut into sex and death, and sex and aging. A little encouragement. you've got a decade on me. Be uplifted here.
Well, here's a book called Aging Lightly by Ram Dass. A Spiritual Paradigm for Conscious Aging. Changes in time, shifting roles, the body, the mind, at the edge of the mystery, which is death, etc. So I've been thinking about this. And if I can start with my frog joke. An older man is walking down the path, and he hears somebody say, psst, could you help me out? And he looks around and he doesn't see anybody. So he walks on and he hears, psst, could you help me out? And he looks around again, he doesn't see anybody. And then he looks down and he sees this frog. Now this is a very rational man and he doesn't believe frogs talk, but there is nobody else around. And he just says, did you say something to me? And the frog says clearly, could you help me out? And the man is taken aback and he says, well, what is it you want? The frog said, I'm under a curse. And if you would kiss me, I would turn into a beautiful, beautiful princess. And I would come and live with you and I would feed you and warm your bed and take care of you. And oh, I'd do everything and I'd make you so happy. The man stood there for a moment, and then he reached down and he picked up the frog and he put it in his pocket and he walked on. And after a little while, he heard from his pocket, "Hey, you forgot to kiss me." And the man said, "You know, at my age, I think it's more interesting to have a talking frog." Sex plays an important role in people's lives. It plays the role, first of all, of procreation. So it preserves the species and brings forth beautiful flowers, beings, and creates family. And it's part of the preciousness of what a human incarnation is about. Why it's so attractive to people is not only for procreation, but because it is a path to bring people very close and sometimes into transcendence, to transcend their own separateness. It's a way in which they escape from prison through orgasm, through the boundaries blurring and the boundaries of self and other blurring through just the intimacy, through intimacy, situational intimacy.